The first book of Kings and chapter 2, and we're only going to read the last clause of the last verse of that chapter. First Kings and chapter 2, and the last clause of the verse reads like this: "And the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon." May the Lord bless the reading of His precious word. I would like tonight, by the help of the Lord and by the help of His gracious Spirit, to address you on the reasons why this verse was really penned. We would really have loved to have read the whole chapter of 1 Kings chapter 2, but we will refer to it and we'll do our very best to explain the most part of it. We're all aware that the first three kings in Israel, Saul, David, and Solomon, each of them spent 40 years in reigning over the kingdom. We heard a little this morning concerning that rule of Saul that caused so much concern, and yet in a sense that blessed, and yet that rule that was marked by blood of David. But when we come to 1 Kings chapter 2, we find that the kingdom is established in the hands of Solomon. It is said that David died being full of days, and yet at 70 years of age, he calls his son Solomon aside, and although he has had a marvelous reign, and although he has done many mighty acts, there are certain things that are troubling the mind of David. He sees, as clear as day, that there are factions within his kingdom. He sees that there are things that unless they be spoke about and dealt with, that Solomon will never ever have peace all the 40 years. And when David is speaking in 1 Kings 2, he's no longer a boy with a sling and a stone. He's no longer a hunted man, or hungry, or any of these other things that we love about him. But at this stage, he is a really old and dying man. And yet he wants his son to have a peaceful reign, and with this at the bottom of his heart, he wants to say something to him. And he goes into matters which must be, and positively are, difficult to speak about, not easy to tell, and not easy to transfer. And I this evening stand in that kind of position as well, to speak concerning the people that are in 1 Kings chapter 2 is no easy thing indeed. Nowadays when one stands before the audience, they want to say something, not that will be remembered, but they want to say something that will be of positive help amongst the people of God. We want to hear in the present day words that are winsome and words that are wise, but we want to hear the words of warning coming across, that we might be guided, that we might be fortified, and that we might be blessed. There are possibly five types of men in the chapter that David warns Solomon about. He says, unless these men are completely routed out of the kingdom, then you'll never have peace all the days of your life. Now it is with a measure of desire that I want to point them out to you. And I'm not going to be forward or impertinent, for I think that is ill becoming of the teachers of God's word. But I do want you to know that these kind of people are not non-existent. That these kind of people are still with us. And there shall never be peace, neither shall there be spiritual tranquility amongst us, until these men are routed out amongst us. You know, he deals with four men, and I'm not going to take them in the order that they are in the chapter. I want to speak to you of the trouble that was caused by Adonijah, Solomon's brother. And then to speak about Joab, who really was the son of David's sister, Zeruiah. Then I want you to think of the priest Abiathar. Then I want you to think of the Benjamite faction in Shimei. And I would to God that we would just get a few minutes to see that in all Barzillai there is not a grain of the vices that were seen in these four men. In fact, Barzillai shows that none of these dreadful vices are in him at all. Adonijah. I want you to think of Adonijah as a persistent place seeker amongst the people of God. You know, this isn't the first time when you come to 1 Kings 2 that Adonijah usurped his place in the realm of Israel. He's a persistent place seeker. Not for him the second fiddle. Not for him the comfort of the palace without doing too much. But Adonijah feels within his breast that the throne should really be his, irrespective of what God has communicated concerning the throne. He is that persistent place seeker. My friends, there are so many people of age and maturity in here that they can go back in their life too when they have seen lovely, precious assembly testimonies ruined by this kind of individual who cannot take second place, and he will not take any place unless he is at the forefront. My dear friends, I want to say, there shall never be peace in our companies as long as the spirit of the persistent place seeker is seen. May we understand that the man that we represent, he's described as meek and lowly, and the meekness and the gentleness of Christ. He is a man that's most unhappy because he cannot get to the top. You know, he does start a revolt or a rebellion, and strangely enough, he gets many people to gather with him. There were many great names with this man Adonijah in his rebellion. But I'm sure you've seen, it's so elementary, that although there were great names, there was none of them good men. Oh, my friends, let us understand that this man Adonijah, he gathered men about him, and he wanted to dethrone the young and upcoming king. And he gathered people about him quite akin to himself. But soon God was to blow upon that matter. You know, he thought in this passage that he would do something. Something that on the surface seems to be a very ordinary thing. But he asked for a woman to wife. And this woman had been the last woman that David had lain with. And you know, Bathsheba would have been glad to get rid of this woman. And she goes into the king and asks for the hand in marriage of Abishai. But you know, my friend, when Solomon sees her coming in, there are some lovely things. When he sees Bathsheba coming in the door, it says, and the king rose from off his throne. And it says, he got her a seat. Wasn't that lovely? That although he had been raised to power, and although he had been raised to honor, when his mother came in the door, he rose off the throne, he got her a seat. But whenever his mother began to give a request, oh, he's full of manners, and he's full of courtesy, and he's full of all those lovely things that are lovely to behold in men. But whenever his mother made requests for a Abishai, Solomon says no. Now Solomon, at a young and tender age, maybe around about 18. Oh, he's mannerable to his mother and kind and gentle. But whenever this suggestion comes out, he says no to his mother. I want to put it this way. I feel in this refusal of Solomon at this juncture, He begins to grow 10 feet tall in my judgment. That although he is soft to his mother, although he is so mannerable and kind, yet down at the base of his heart, and in the God-given wisdom that he's got, he sees beyond this application. And he sees nothing else but presumption and revolt and rebellion in the heart of Adonijah. What's the point I want to lift from that? It's this. Oh, that we had this wisdom to be able to unveil, to be able to take a sight, to be able to just scan through, to be able to look right through the many suggestions of the present day that would seem to undermine the authority of the Word of God, seem to undermine the authority of the people of God and the testimony of God invested in Solomon. Oh, that we had amongst us, not preachers especially, but all that we had in the local assemblies, men who had eyes that looked further than today and tomorrow, but made the deep implications of all the suggestions that are really brought before them. And so we discover that here is this man, a persistent place seeker, and of course, Solomon knows how to deal with him. I know when you read this chapter, you get the feeling that there's a sort of hard streak in Solomon, and that it's dreadfully brutal, the things that are done, but not so. This is the second occasion that this man has tried to lift up his hand against the king. Leniency is shown to him before, but now the judgment of God must fall upon him. And out of the kingdom goes the persistent place seeker, the man called Adonijah. My friends, whether it be in David's kingdom, by Solomon's kingdom and establishment, or whether it be in the local assembly, we want to say, we know no place for persistent place seekers. We want to tell you that no one likes you. We want to tell you that no one can stand it. We want to tell you you're self-deceived. No, my friend, the person that's really loved is the man who really feels in his own heart he's not worthy of any place. He doesn't seek any place. That's the man we all really love indeed. And so, Adonijah, the place seeker. We come to another man, and I'm watching the time. I thought to get a clock stop was one of the great things I'd longed for years. Not only Adonijah, but Joab, the son of Zeruiah. Adonijah, a persistent place seeker. Oh, let me say this gently over the audience. There's another man must go from the kingdom if prosperity and blessing and joy and holiness continue. And that is the cold-blooded man, Joab, the son of Zeruiah. See, someone that strong language, it's not really, it's really very conservative language about that man. He was a cold-blooded man. Read this chapter for evidence of what I'm going to say. It says he slew men in the time of peace. He thought nothing of having blood on his girdle and blood in his shoes when it was not the time of war. A direct reference to the death of Abner. Oh, he's a cold-blooded man. What really was Joab, the son of Zeruiah's problem? It was this. He couldn't bear to think there was another man better than himself. Well, I repeat that. He never could bear to think that there was another man better than himself. Would you like to convince me this afternoon, this evening, that that tribe of individuals are dead? My dear friend, David saw what David suffered. Listen to his cry. Ye sons of Zeruiah, be too hard for me. David could not deal with them. And David was a mighty man, full of prowess and full of mighty military ability. But he couldn't be up to the scheming and the planning and the evil and the conceit of the cold-blooded sons of Zeruiah. And so he must go as well. You know, he had no respect for law. He had no respect for peace. He had no respect for the Word of God. He had no respect for any of these things. He was a law unto himself. I would be a strong believer in individuality. But I want to say this. A man never really learns to grow until he has learned to work with others, to work under others, to admire others. Do you ever notice in 4th of Colossians? Do you ever notice how Paul admires the labors of others? And in 1 Corinthians 16, he speaks about the labors of others. Oh, the big man is the man who thinks that others are far, far better than ever he could ever be, in honor preferring one another. Now Joab sinly, in that he could not bear to think of another. No respect. His end is near, very near. And we find him clinging on to the horns of the altar, where never, ever do we find him in his life. We find him in his death, clinging to the horns of the altar. Undoubtedly, he's looking for mercy at the end of his days. But he never gave any himself all his life. Now, my dear friend, I want to say this to you. If you spend your life giving mercy to no one, please don't think that many will be merciful to you. And you know, if you've never given hospitality all your life, don't you be expecting at the end of yours everyone to be currying favor with you. My friend, I hope you're getting it. Here's a man at the end of his life looking for the thing that he never once gave. May God give us to understand. The man that went to slay him at the altar, he was going to take his job. His name is Benaiah. When he came to the altar, he turned away. Oh, you would think that, well, here's my chance. Now if I finish Joab off here and now, my position and promotion is secure. But there's something different about Benaiah. He turns away from the altar and reports back to his master Solomon. And Solomon says, go and slay him just the same. Isn't it good that in the man that was to follow him there was a measure of mercy? Oh, my friends, I appeal to you tonight. I want to say this to you. Before the kingdom can be established, persistent, place-seeking men must go out. And cold-blooded individuals like Joab, they must go out as well. I'm sure you've seen he wasn't buried in a very famous place. He was buried in the wilderness, but not among the noble men. My, he had fought some battles. I'm sure he had plenty of medals across his chest. But he was buried out in a wilderness to be remembered no more forever. I want you to note as I pass by certain things about him. He was clever. He was clever. He was gifted. But he was cold-blooded and feelingless. And that is a biblical fact. These men will not advance. And these men shall not promote the welfare and the good of the people of God. I have taken the next one, Abiathar. The unstable man. Abiathar, the unstable man. You know, there's a lot of people in here, I'm sure, they don't think that instability is really a great sin. Well, I want to tell you it's not a virtue. I want to tell you that instability is a real vice. In the Bible everywhere, God condemns the unstable man. The man that does not have his own convictions. The man that is tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine and sleight of men. The Bible everywhere condemns the unstable. Well, I must condense it. There had been that popular movement again, another popular movement. And we find that this Abiathar of the priest, he links himself with a popular movement. And I'm sure in his heart he thought that it was right. But my friend, he fails because he did not understand the way and the will of God. To have power and authority invested in Solomon, and he takes the side of others against the king. And of course, he must be dealt with too. Death is the sentence for every traitor. Death is the sentence for every traitor to the throne. But mercy is the glory of kings. Mercy is what was shown to Abiathar. He deserved to die, but he is shown mercy, and the reason is given why he showed. He was shown mercy. He says, "Get thee to thy fields in Anath." He says, "I will not put thee to death because I remember another day. A day when thou wast with my father, when there was very little to eat, and few friends, and a lot of shame, and many restless nights." And he mitigates the judgment because of the man's former life with David. Remember in all your judgments. Remember and be fair. Oh, just to have men, all the men in this meeting, to be fair in their judgments. So much prejudice, so much partiality, so many people with colors in their glasses, they can't make a fair judgment and assessment of matters. Look at Solomon. Abiathar deserved to die, but he took his mind away back. Away back into the distant years, when Abiathar suffered in a cave, and nothing at all to eat, and suffering with his father, and so he's put to the fields in Anath. Solomon remembered his former days, his hardships. I'm just about finished. There's a man called Shimei. I want to give him a name as well. Foul-mouthed Shimei. Foul-mouthed Shimei. Oh, if ever the king's presented a despicable character, it's this man. You know, you may judge that when David went out at the Absalom rebellion, you might judge David as you like. And I have done that too at times. There's many a man can judge David and say you should have kept your boy down and you should have put him under greater restraint. There many a man can judge him, and they're right, and you have the liberty to do it. But there's few men can understand him that day. And the sorrow of his heart as he went up the hill, and as this Benjamite came with his foul mouth and kept throwing stones at him and started casting up his family's inconsistency to him, that's easy stuff, that. Oh, it's easy to decry a man. It's easy to cast up his family. It's easy to throw up his sins before him. And it says, until the evening he cast up the dust upon him. And you remember yon sons of Zeruiah, you remember it, don't you? They say, "Just let me touch him once, I'll not need to do it twice." He says, "Let him curse on." You know, you're really a big man when you can let the others curse on. Oh, you are that. And then just days after it, after the trouble at Mahanaim, he comes over the river by the ferry. And who's standing waiting for him? Not now, foul-mouthed Shimei, but soft, soft, sophisticated, sweet-mouthed Shimei. You see, it just took two or three days and a different circumstance for him to change his coat. No wonder Leviticus says, the chameleon is an abomination unto the Lord. As it changes its coat here and into here and into here. Oh, Shimei. Says someone, he'll die too. No, no. He doesn't die yet. Solomon said, David said, leave him alone. Then on comes Solomon time, and Solomon puts him under discipline. He says, you'll live, but you'll get a house in Jerusalem, and there you'll stay, and the day you go outside of Jerusalem is the day you'll die. 3 years. 3 years. You know, 3 years is a lot of men to stay under discipline. A for some can hardly keep under it 3 days. You see, my friend, notice this man has not changed. I'll tell you why. His very employees wouldn't stay with him. He didn't even make a good employee. They ran away and got a job with the King of Gath. But that business when the Christians can't even keep employees, and they get better conditions with the King of Gath. Ah, my friend, it says it came to Solomon's ears. What an Ephesid system was among the Jews, even then, aye, and away before then too. Word came to the king that he'd went out to get them and got them and brought them back, possibly cheap labor involved. And as he brought them back, Solomon's waiting. And foul-mouthed Shimei had to go as well. Do you think, brethren, our companies are going to be blessed with men like this? We're needing to learn the lessons. We're needing to take it to our own hearts. We're wanting to understand that if we're to be prospered and blessed, then all these actions and all these kind of things must be completely eradicated from amongst us. Was Barzillai a persistent place seeker? David says, I'll give you 3 apartments in the palace. I'll give you a flat in the palace. All mud cons. Everything all laid on. Every meal, lovely menu, everything settled. My, those men has given up assemblies and principles just for a pound note, some of them. Here's a man. And he is not a persistent place seeker. He says this, I won't come. But there's a man, an unknown man here. Let him go on. Oh, let Chimham go on. Isn't that his name? Let him get the place. He says, I'm past all place. I'm past all these things. He says, how can I hear again the voice of singing men and singing women? All I want to do is to die and be buried with my father and be laid beside him. Oh, I think it's soft and sentimental. It's quite nostalgic going over all that. It's really lovely. There's something in this man. Not only so, he was not cold-blooded, but warm-hearted and kind. But when other people wouldn't give to David at Mahanaim, they were all waiting to see how the tide turned. They didn't want to risk their skin for David. Ah, but it says he came with beds and basins and raisins and barley and all those ordinary commodities which in any other day wasn't worth much. Oh, how kind and warm-hearted he really was. And was he unstable? Oh, he stood firm to God's appointed and anointed king in David. Was he foul-mouthed? Oh, every word that came out of his mouth was soft and tender and full of feeling. Oh, thank God there is still amongst his people those who desire the features and the virtues of Christ. Those who know what it means to follow their master and to be rid forever of these dreadful vices that are portrayed to us in the kingdom. And so the kingdom is established in Solomon. The army is under the leadership of Benaiah. And Zadok takes over the priesthood, and the king is established.